So, good afternoon, everyone. Good day to a couple of Aussies. They were saying something about when we asked them how we should get the Kiwis to like us, they said, talk about rugby. But I don't know anything about rugby. But presumably from I'm given to understand, New Zealand is quite good at it. So maybe someone can stop by and explain the rules or something at some point. Anyway, how many of you write boring line of business applications for a living? That'd be me. Yeah. How many of these applications have more than one user at a given time? Anyone? Anyone at all? So you know about concurrency. How many of you love fixing concurrency bugs?
Not a single hand should go
up
at this stage.
No, come on! Not a single hand will go up.
Well, enough of these boring questions, right? Let's talk about something a bit more interesting. Another question. How many of you like playing Halo? Right?
What?
Well, not enough hands. You guys should get a life, all
you
right?
You guys should get an Xbox.
Get an Xbox to start with. Anyway, this talk is... Wouldn't it be nice if it's a Halo game, right? Uses a whole bunch of, they've got hundreds and thousands of users who actually use Halo. It's got thousands of games, hundreds and thousands of games that are actually played and stored. So wouldn't it be nice to actually use the same kind of technology that they use in the back end to power all the stuff, to keep track of all the games and the plays and so on and so forth, right? And that's what this talk is all about. The talk is titled Scalable by Design, the Audience Actor Framework for Azure. It's a pretty long title. But effectively, what we're going to be talking about is the actor model. My name is Mahesh Krishnan, and my co-presenter is John Azaria. We're both from Melbourne, Australia, and we're both Windows Azure MVPs as well. So what's the agenda? It's pretty simple. What we want to do is talk about the problem domain, talk about what we're trying to solve first, right? And then we want to introduce you to the actor model, what the actor model is, and then we'll get very specific. We'll get into a very specific implementation of the actor model, called the Orleans framework or Project Orleans, as it's called. Hopefully, you guys like demos. So, you know, the first 20 odd minutes, we'll talk about the theory part of it, and then we'll jump in and it's demos from then on. So, the demos are meant specifically to show how to use Orleans, rather than, you know, be jazzy and have really good user interfaces and stuff like that, right? So this is all console applications. I'm going to show you how to write Orleans apps. So moving on to the problem. What is the problem?
Let's see. Let me get this. Right. So writing concurrent distributed applications is hard, right? Anyone disagree with that? It's hard. Why is it hard, right? So if you look at the problem, inherently, the problem has, in a distributed system, you've got latency and unreliability in the communication between different parts of the system. You've got unpredictability in the way in which the concurrent actors take place. You know, messages come in, you can't really predict what you're going to get.
Oops.
We spend an enormous amount of time and effort achieving levels of data consistency, usually at the expense of performance. So in a typical N-tier architecture that we're all familiar with, we realize that the big problems start coming when we want to scale horizontally. And usually the horizontal scaling problem is not at the application level, it's at the database level. And then somebody might stumble upon the CAP theorem and think about how it is going to be to actually partition data and deal with all of that. And so when we talk about large-scale applications like Halo, which give you near real-time response, we actually are looking at somewhat of a different architecture. So we look at applications that need to deal with varying loads. We have transient failures, permanent failures. Our applications have to survive those and sustain. You've got enormous amounts of concurrency. Now, we're not talking about concurrency as a side effect. We're talking about concurrency as actually the main purpose of the application in the first place. And we want our applications to be responsive. Throughout all of this, you need a responsive system. So we want applications that are scalable, resilient, decoupled, and ultimately responsive. But reasoning about such systems is hard. You know, we know about von Neumann architecture, we know about Turing machines, we can put down mathematical rigor and talk about, you know, referential transparency in single-threaded systems to some extent, and still come away with systems that are not easy to reason about. But when you start putting this kind of thing into the picture, reasoning about this in a mathematical and formal sense is extraordinarily difficult. It's not easy to do that. And part of it is actually because of the discussions we talked about, it's the indeterminacy of the system that is inherent in it. Now, the indeterminacy of the system is not a byproduct of bad implementation. It's not the wrong framework. It's not the wrong language. Indeterminacy is what makes the system real. And it's also what makes it extraordinarily difficult to reason about. So in the early 1970s, there was a smart fellow called Carl Hewitt that started talking about building models that could encapsulate this inherent indeterminacy in the system and try to come up with formal ways to reason about them. And he built he wrote a paper and, you know, we started talking about the actor model. Now, what is the actor model? You know, people, you know, if you look at the literature out there today, you look at Erlang and you look at Akka, and people have very informal ways of talking about actors. But there's actually a formal, precise definition for that allows us to reason about the system. So we talked about that. In the actor model, an actor is a fundamental unit of computation. It's a fundamental unit that embodies all the three important things in a distributed computing environment. It embodies the processing, some form of processing. There's data and storage. And then there's obviously communication. Now, if you think about how you know, a system like this would work, by the very nature of the fact that there's all of the communication, you've kind of captured the fact that there's some indeterminacy in the picture. Real actor systems... Okay, so before we go there, let's go back and look at what the axioms for the actor systems are. In order to make it easy for us to reason about actors, we're going to only allow them to do three things in our system. All that the actors can do are create other actors, communicate with those actors that it knows about, and then designate what it wants to do with the next message. In fact, these are the only three things that it needs to do about. There's nothing more in terms of the infrastructure that we assume. And that's what makes it easy for us to reason about a system like this. So for example, when we do things like talk about messaging, we don't assume that it is purely reliable messaging. The actor who's receiving the message may or may not be around. It's okay. The system is only going to guarantee that it's going to make the best effort possible to try and get you the message at some point. That's pretty much all the guarantees you have, and that's what gives us the ability to reason about these systems. Now, I don't want to get into much more detail in terms of the theory of how actor systems work, but we can talk about what real actor systems look like. An actor system basically would need to have some form of mechanism, some mechanism to manage actors, create actors, dispose of them, find ways to address them, find ways to send messages back and forth, provide some kind of best effort semantic, and have some durable storage. With this kind of a system, there's one more principal concept that we can think about. It's the concept of a future or a promise, which is effectively a representation of a function that hasn't been executed yet. So we've decoupled the time when we define the invocation of a function from the time the function is being evaluated. And by doing so, we are able to talk about the behavior of these systems without necessarily getting rid of indeterminacy. So for example, when you talk about failure and you represent behavior as a promise, well, 9 times out of 10, the promise, when it comes back, will have a result from a successfully executed function. But in the 1 time out of 10, if there's an exception, you don't bring the whole system down like you do in the traditional way of development. What you do is you encapsulate the fact that it threw an exception into the promise, and that information flows back out and is dealt with properly. So it's a very simple way to talk about delayed execution. In the .NET world, we have a word for this. It's called the task. The .NET task is actually a representation of a promise. The actor systems, there are plenty of implementations of them. Most of them tend to have classic object-oriented semantics on the actors, which is to say that there is a strict interface by which you can interact with an actor object. But inside the actor is usually a lot of functional semantics, so that it allows you to simplify the reasoning of the behavior. So you don't have mutable state, for example, in general. And you tend to be referentially transparent within the actor and interact with it using object-oriented semantics. Now, what we do in Project Orleans is we take these concepts, and with a few exceptions, we implement these concepts on a scalable, elastic fabric called Azure, and get ourselves the ability to run a full-blown actor model on a cloud platform.
Yeah. So effectively, what is Project Orleans, right? It's basically nothing more than a distributed actor runtime and an SDK that is built to run on .NET and specifically on Azure. I mean, now, not only does it provide you with the runtime and SDK that I actually mentioned, it also has a whole bunch of bits that, once you actually get it installed on your machine, will provide you with things like Visual Studio templates to start creating an Orleans project. And it will do some code gen stuff to make it easier for you. But more importantly, Orleans provides a very simple programming model for you to start programming actors. So John spoke about, you know, sending messages across from one actor to another. A lot of that stuff will be abstracted away from you. So what you effectively do is, you know, get a proxy to that remote object, and all you do is make a function call. So all that kind of stuff is abstracted away from you. So it's easy to program in it. There are a bunch of code that will be generated for you, so that it makes it easy to call some of this, you know, to activate an actor and things like that. Just makes it easy. And above all, it's actually built on .NET. So John also touched upon the concept of promises and tasks. So you can use things like async await, and it's just very easy to just program in it. Now, apart from all of this, let's just get into the terminology, right? Let's get into terminology. So in Orleans, you basically have the fundamental unit of the actor model, which is actually an actor, is called a grain over here. Let's go back to the Halo game, right? And when Halo has millions of games that have been played, and there are, you know, hundreds and thousands, millions of users as well, each and every one of these things will be modeled as a grain. You can think of it as a .NET object, right? Now, each and every one of these grains will exist in a runtime execution container, and it's called a silo. So you could have like a game grain, right, that represents a game. You could have like a player grain that represents a player. And all of these things will exist within a silo. And because we want to have it scalable, you can have lots and lots of these silos that run at the same time. Okay, so that's pretty much the terminology. The two main things that you need to think about is the concept of grain and also the concept of a silo. So In the previous slide, one of the things that I actually glossed over was it actually spoke about the concept of a virtual actor model, and it spoke about virtual grains as well. So what is a virtual grain? Now, to explain the concept of virtual grains, I want to touch upon 3 points. First is that the grains exist forever. Perpetual existence. So what it means is that when you want to get a, you don't go ahead and create a grain. When you want to use a grain, you basically go to Orleans and say, hey, get me this grain. And this is the identifier by which I know this grain. Go and get me this grain. It will manage, it will basically get an instance of the grain, or it'll activate the grain, and will give you a reference to it, which you can actually use to send messages. In this case, all you'll do is call methods on it. And Orleans will also manage the, it basically manages the life cycle of the grains. So when you have lots and lots of grains and you run out of resources or the grain isn't being used, if you want to delete the grain, Orleans will actually take care of you. Things like garbage collection and all that kind of stuff is taken care of you. It also have this location transparency. So you have multiple silos that actually exist, and these silos can exist in multiple servers. You really shouldn't care where this grain is activated when you want to use it. And Orleans will kind of like abstract all these things away from you, so you don't really have to worry about where it is. Now, there was a talk on Orleans in Build conference this year, and the speaker actually made a really good point. He actually said, hey, when you're working on a when you're referencing a .NET object, you don't really care about where it's actually instantiated in memory. I mean, which memory stick it actually exists. The same thing applies over here. You really shouldn't care about, in a distributed environment, you shouldn't really care about where this object has been activated or where it actually exists. All you do is like, hey, get me this object, and I want to work with it, and then Orleans takes care of this whole thing, and it'll activate it in a silo, and it'll give you a reference to it, and then you start using it. The other thing that it actually takes care of is that when you pass the state of these grains can be persisted into cold storage if you need it. So even if the silo goes down and you want to reactivate it, you'll be able to reactivate it from the existing data of that grain. So all that will be taken care of by Orleans. So anyway, we've been waffling on for a fair bit, and enough of the theory part. It's probably time to get and start looking at some code, right? So, before that, I just wanted to touch upon one little thing. We spoke about scale, right? We want to run. We want to have our application scale as big as like Halo, so lots and lots of instances running at the same time. So what happens is, right, you'll have multiple silos, and all of them, and we want to run this on Azure. So effectively, each and every silo runs as a worker role in Azure. So if you want to scale out, all you need to do is add more worker roles, and Orleans will automatically figure it out. So in this case, you see a whole bunch of grains. I mean, in this diagram, of course, we have like 4 or 5 grains per silo. But in reality, it will be like thousands of grains in a single silo. And how many run in a silo depends on the size of your grain and how much memory and resources that you have on individual server. But apart from that, you can have as many grains in a single silo. If you're running low on resources in all these silos and you want to create if you want to activate a new grain, a new silo will automatically be created for you. And then all the grains will go over there, right? So you kind of like get that scalability, the ability to increase your load, one of the things that John touched upon earlier. What happens when one of these silos actually gets taken off? Right, you have some kind of failure and the server fails, maybe it's a transient failure, whatever it is, that, maybe your worker role just gets recycled for whatever reason and you've lost it. What happens to all those grains? Those grains will be activated in other silos. So you kind of like have this resiliency built in as well. So as I said, enough talk. It's probably time to get in and start doing some demos. And what better way to do it than with the standard Hello World application, right? So,
okay.
So if you want to install Orleans, all you need to do is to go to orleans.codeplex.com, And when you go there, I mean, it's got a whole bunch of details. It's got documentation. It also has a link to where you can go and download Orleans itself. When you install Orleans, you get as I said earlier, you get the SDK and the runtime. But it also goes and installs a whole bunch of things in Visual Studio. So I've got a blank solution over here. Let me go in and add a new project.
Can everyone see the image?
Yeah,
can you see the screen?
So what it's actually done is I've installed Orleans on my machine, and notice a whole bunch of projects actually show up over there. I mean, there are a lot over there, mainly because you've got things for C# and VB.NET and so on. But there are three things that will actually stand out. One is your interface collection. There's a grain class collection and your dev test host. Okay, the interface collection is basically where you write your grain interfaces. So, for example, if you have a game grain, you'll have an IE grain interface written over here. Okay. And then this grain class collection is where you'll implement that. You have the implementation of the interface that we were just written. So if this is an iGame grain, this will be your game grain. If you want to test this, you can test it locally, and that's what this Orleans dev test host does. It just does a bit of code gen for you to quickly spin up the project and test it real quick. So let me just start and go ahead and create an Orleans grain interface. Oh, I don't want to select Visual Basic. I'll struggle if I do. Let's go with the C# solution or project. So notice that it's actually created something called an iegrain1.cs over here. And that's the file I've got open. And notice that the interface extends something known as an iegrain. That's kind of like a placeholder, right? So Orleans basically looks for this interface and then figures out, and it'll do a whole bunch of code gen and things like that. So it knows that this is going to be a grain. So I'll get rid of this, and we'll just create a simple interface declarations. A couple of simple things. I mean, I've just got a read message and a write message. Things that I want to point out is that we don't return a string or we don't return a void. What we do instead is we return a task of string. The reason for this is that we're going to be sending a message across to these grains, and we want this to be run asynchronously. So, and this allows you to use the async await keyword in .NET and just use this seamlessly. The next thing I want to do, let me build this to make sure it's all working. The next thing I want to do is add another project. And this is for the implementation. Let me make sure my references are there. And notice that in this case, we extend an Orleans.grain class. Now, the Orleans.grain class contains a whole bunch of, it's got an implementation over there. Things like what happens, there are virtual methods and so on that you can use in your class without having to write the whole thing from scratch. So I'll get rid of this, and rather than watch me slowly type this whole thing, I've got my grain implementation. It's pretty simple. Whenever I write a message, I store it onto this memory variable called message, and when I read the message, I basically pass it back. Pretty simple and straightforward. Now, the third thing that I want to do is to create a host where I can actually fire this up. Create a silo host. And what this application does is, because it's a test app, it's got both the server component and the client component. Now, the first line over here, it actually creates an app domain so that the server can run on its own app domain. So you don't have things like shared memory and things like that. Okay, so that's what it does. And the code for starting it up is in this file called Orleans Host Wrapper. So I'm not going to run through this file, but this is what it does. I mean, it fires up the silo, and this is where the grains will actually be activated. So in my program.cs, I mean, what it does is you initialize the Orleans client. So this is the client part of it. So this is where you actually call the grains itself. Notice that it's got a file, an initialize, and you pass in a configuration file, devtest-client-config.xml. In fact, there are two files over here. One is the devtest client configuration and the devtest server configuration. That contains things like, hey, you know, what port do I need to go to talk to the server? And the client has, you know, that's what the client has. The server says, hey, what port should I actually be looking for these connections to come from? Right? So you've got all that init stuff there. And here, so let me go in and add a little demo code over here. So what I've done is, I go and get a grain, but notice this thing over here. There's something called grain one factory. We didn't write this. How does it, you know, we've created an implementation called grain one, and we have an interface called igrain1, but where does grain1 factory come from? This is the bit where Orleans does some code gen magic for you under the hoods. So if I go back to my grain interface, see there's a file over here called orleans.codegen.cs. If I open it up, and that contains the factory implementation and so on. So it makes it easy. So if I want to get a grain of a certain type, I just go, in this case, it's grain1factory.getgrain, and I pass in an identifier. That'll go in and get that identifier. In our case, you know, the identifier really means nothing. I mean, I've just put in a value of 0, but you know, it can be anything. You can have like an integer, you can have a GUID, or you can have a string. And there are ways in which you can actually extend that. And John will cover that a little bit when he goes through some advanced stuff. So now that I've actually done this, I'm going to go and say, hey, put a bunch of stuff. So what I've done is I'm basically sending a message across to the silo, to the grain, setting a value of hello world, and then reading it back again. It should show hello world back again, right? Pretty simple and straightforward. So let me run this after I set my startup project. Now when this starts up, right, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that runs up on the screen, some really scary stuff. But you don't have to worry about it. This is all the initialization stuff and all the tracing that they've actually put in. So once it actually starts up, you will say, you know, Orleans silo is running, and press enter to terminate. We shouldn't actually terminate because this is when we start calling our grain itself. And that's pretty simple. I mean, it just sent in the message, hello world, and it basically got the hello world back. Very trivial example. Now, what we want to do is one of the things that it actually we've done is set a value. Well, the grain, the ID is 0, and we've set a value on it, and we've read it back. Now, once I actually shut the server down, and I go back, and you know, the server starts up again, and I go back in and say get grain of 0, what will happen is the value that we actually stored, which is hello world, would have disappeared altogether, because none of this data has persisted. So how do we go about and persisting this stuff? Because, I mean, that's when it actually gets really useful. So that's pretty simple, and I'll show you how it's done. Let's just go back to Visual Studio here. So let me go back to my interface. So notice that I actually have an additional method over here, but pretty much it does exactly the same thing. It's got an this method will throw, but apart from that, you've got the read message and the write message in this interface. And if you go down, I've got another interface called iMessageGrainState, which extends iGrainState. And this is where I'm actually storing the message. Okay? Now, once I do this, I go to the implementation of this, which is MessageGrain. And I slap an attribute on top of it called storage provider. This actually tells Orleans that, hey, you know, you need to store this, and that's the name of the storage provider. I'll come back to the name, the provider name over there. I mean, it's got Azure Store over there. It can be anything, ABC or whatever it is. And we associate this name ABC with, you know, stable storage or SQL database or whatever it may be at in the configuration file. So I put storage provider over there. And then I've also slightly changed the base class over here that it actually implements as grain of t instead of just grain. And I pass in the I message grain state over there in the template, as a template parameter. And then what I do over here is it's got a property called state, and I just said state.message. Message is basically contained in iMessageGrainState, and I set those two values over there. The last thing is the config file. We go to Silohost Demo 2, and notice that I've got storage providers over here, and one of the things the storage providers is the provider type. It actually reads orleansstorage.azuretablestorage. And that's the name that we are setting in the attribute. And it's got a data connection string that allows me to set the value in table storage. If I actually run this now, and you said this is a startup project. And let me go to my program.cs. All the scary stuff. Eventually I should get here, and I get an exception. Maybe this is a good point, a good time to actually show you how the exception handling works. Now, one of the nice things about Orleans is that it basically is .NET, right? So when an exception actually happens, you can just use your try-catch mechanism to catch the exceptions. In this case, let me see what the exception is. Let me go look at the view detail and look at the inner exception, and it says something. All right. I think I know how to get rid of this. I just need to rebuild this whole thing one more time. So let me just rebuild this, and once I rebuild it, it should just work, I think. Starting it up now. That actually worked this time, so it was just a rebuild that was needed. So what I'm going to do now is if I comment this write message, if I read it back, it should work. Now, I can show you another way to show that it's actually worked. Now, I put this in table storage, and notice that in Orleans Grain State, it's got the message stored over there. So when I go back and read this message, it'll go to table storage, extract that, and put it up in my grain. So if I go back and run this again, I'm not writing anything to the grain,
but it should have persisted the data, and when I read it back, it should just come back with the hello world. So, so I should have put a breakpoint, but anyway.
It's control.
But anyway, so it basically reads the data back and comes back. Now, of course, you know, these are pretty simple and trivial examples. Now, where can you really use something like Orleans? And John. Yeah, you want me to talk about Azure?
We'll come back.
Okay. So, what we want to do is we want to run this on Azure, right? I mean, how do you actually run this on Azure? I did mention earlier that all you need to do is run it on a worker role. So, let me just jump in and show you how that's done real quick. I've got a worker role over here that I've already created, and I've got a worker role.cs file. Effectively, what I need to do is to create, declare an Orleans Azure silo as a member, and then on my start, I just need to create an Orleans Azure silo, and when I'm running it, I just start it up. That's pretty much it. You have things like when you're stopping it, you also stop the Azure silo. I notice that I've got a configuration file over here as well, the Orleans configuration.xml file, and that holds a bunch of information on you know, what storage providers and so on and so forth. The only other thing that you need to worry about is what ports you need to open when you're running this. Which is basically the Orleans Azure endpoints and the silo endpoint. So what Orleans does, it uses the Azure silo endpoint to make sure that there are different silos communicate with each other and knows about each other. That's what it's used for. Once you do this right, I mean, if you want to scale out, all you need to do is start having more instances of the worker role, and we'll just automatically scale out. So it's pretty straightforward that way. But, you know, so where do you actually end up using something like this? Where do you want to use Azure? I mean, where do you want to use Orleans? You know, this thing that we actually have in our hand, that could actually be a pretty good application for it. John, you want to talk about a little bit more?
Yeah, in fact, I wish I knew about this before I came to TechEd New Zealand. But it's actually a classic example of the kind of application that you would build using Azure, I mean, build using Orleans. Now, think about what this thing gives us in here. We have a few thousand people coming to TechEd New Zealand, and there are events that are taking place. You know, I tap this against some reader somewhere, and there's information flowing around. But actually, there's information that needs to be aggregated at some point. There's information that allows me to say, I've already taken my Coke for the day, or that I've already signed in for some kind of contest or whatever it is. A traditional approach would be to basically have a database, and then you'd have mutated state in the middle, so when somebody actually sends something, you'd put some business rules to say, hey, this guy's already signed in, don't let him sign in again, that kind of thing. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that you'd have to lift to the business rules to be able to do that. Another approach might be to use some form of event sourcing and, you know, some advanced way of doing things like that, right? These are events, they all get sourced, you can run some kind of aggregating MapReduce query on top of it. Or you can model this thing as an active system where every user of this thing is a grain, and every room is a grain. And when somebody enters the room, there's a message that says, this user has entered this room. And by then looking at the room grain, you could then say who's inside, who's outside. By looking at the user grain, you could potentially come up with a long list of where they've been and what they've done and what they've claimed and so on and so forth. So there's localized state that you can actually put inside or encapsulate within the grain. And that's the kind of system that actor systems are quite good for, right? Now, I didn't know about this, otherwise I would have built the demo around it. But I did have a birthday party for my daughter, and we had 5 kids show up. So we had a little pass the parcel game. And I figured, let me model that as an actor game so that we can all understand. So let's assume you have 5 children, and I'm going to have a little bit of a parcel there. I'm going to pass the parcel around and say every 3rd child gets to take off 1 wrapper, and they find a little gift inside, and they're no longer in the game anymore. They've got their gift. And so you move around and eliminate children at every step, and eventually the person left behind gets the booty in the middle, right? So you want to find out how in a group of 5 people, if I knock out every 3rd person, so that's 1, 2, 3, gone. 1, 2, 3, gone. 1, 2, 3, gone. 1, 2, 3, gone. And you want to be in this position in order to win, right? So it's a familiar problem, actually, it turns out. And there are many ways you can do it. So you can model it using bit vectors. You can model it using circular buffers. You can model it using all kinds of things. But we're going to do it using actors, right? Let me hop over here and try and show you how that's done. Now, the first thing that you'll notice is that you have 2 grains. You have a game grain, and I'm going to get into demo 3 here. The first small point. We have in Orleans a separation between the interface of the object that you're going to talk to and the implementation of the object. And as Mahesh showed you, you know, you create the iGrain and the grain base and all of this other stuff. Now, why do we have that? We have that because we have, that is the reason why you get this virtual actor model. What lands up happening is that the iGrain defines the programmatic interface to the actor. So in our case situation, I've got a whole bunch of properties like position and identifier and elimination order and so on and so forth. And I have a method here that takes a game message and passes that message around. So just like we have in the model that we talked about, children are passing a parcel between each other. If there's only one child, I mean, there's a child grain here, and you have different instances of the child grain for each of the children in the game. So if you look at the game, the game grain, we start by creating a bunch of children. We initialize the children. And then we find the first child, and we give them the parcel. And then the first child, then, let's dive in there. The implementation of this. Can everybody see the code? It's fine. The child basically finds the next child that is next to it by looking at its ID and doing some modulo arithmetic, and then passes the child on by modifying the message. So if the child hasn't been eliminated already and is about to get eliminated, then it sends it a message saying, hey, I'm about to be eliminated, so you're the next, I restart the count from you kind of thing. And then we send back a message to the next child. So we now have a grain that is talking to other instances of itself. This is actually a bad idea if you think about, in a single-threaded environment, which is kind of how the whole concurrency model was designed. You have a blocking call in a single-threaded environment to yourself. That spells deadlock, right? And as concurrency experts, we all don't like those things. So Orleans allows us to actually mark a grain as saying, hey, I know what I'm doing. I do actually want to model recursion in this case. I do actually want to send a message to myself eventually. So mark me as reentrant. And that attribute over there allows us to model quite strongly the concept of reentrant grains. This gives us the ability for us to pass messages around and eventually pass messages back to ourselves. As in the case of the children's game, you're going to be passing messages around the cycle, right? Now, Mahesh has already covered off the storage providers. I'm not going to do that. There's a different way of using state. I'm not going to cover that either because we're running a little bit low on time at the moment. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just throw my fate to the winds and run without debugging. And, aha, I should run the right project. Let's see. I might actually do this once in a while. I've actually written one or two programs before. So let's see how that goes. Now, there's a couple of things in here, right? Reentrant grains are good because they allow you to model recursion. It turns out that message passing happens using value semantics. So those functional programmers amongst you will know that when you say value semantics, it means that when you get this message, it's treated as if it is immutable. And the way Orleans manages that is by making sure that when you send a message to somebody, it doesn't send what you think you gave it. It sends a deep clone copy of the thing. And that's actually kind of expensive if you think about it. You can quite easily start sending messages that are megabytes in size. You don't really want to spend the effort of copying it, especially if you have all of your grains running in the same silo. If you take on the discipline of writing an immutable message and take on the responsibility to keep the value semantics inviolate yourself, then you can actually mark the message as being an immutable message. And if you look in here, there are no public setters and they're all copy constructed, so this is a nice immutable message. Or you could use F#. You can basically find a way to get some performance out of this. And here we go. We have child 5 as the winner, and if you fancy playing with this, you can. You can Google Josephus. Turns out to be that's the problem that we're solving here with 10 people and a step of 2. And you can see that the children were eliminated in that order. And that actually means that we have now modeled a problem of passing messages around and gotten a useful solution out of it. And we can actually reason about, you know, the running time and the order statistics of the algorithm and so on and so forth. Right, what's the next thing we want to talk about? Yes. Because you can pass things using value semantics, you can also pass grains around. You can pass whole grains around. So in terms of the child grain, the game result in here is actually a child grain, a whole grain by itself. And Orleans will take care of making sure that it's not just a blind serialization. It'll actually do the appropriate marshalling to make sure that stuff gets sent across correctly. And it turns out that that's quite useful because you can quite naturally express yourself as if you were writing normal object-oriented code, when really what you're doing is putting a whole bunch of stuff on top of the Orleans framework so that it takes care of the message passing semantics for you.
In fact, you can even do as, you can also pass this parameter to it, for
yeah,
instance.
Yeah, you can pass this.
And it will automatically do all the marshalling and everything for you.
Right, so we got that, we got persistence. We have also stateless workers. I don't have a demo of that. Stateless workers are like basically remote functions. So if you want a function ship, you can have a static class that basically has no state inside it, and Orleans will treat it like it's a way to scalably call, remotely, use remote processing power. So for example, a classic example might be to compute pieces of a fractal. If you had a static method that took in a bunch of arguments and returned to you a result, and it didn't depend on state, you could mark it as a stateless worker, create multiple instances or activations of a grain all over the place, and allow yourself to function ship. So it's quite a very quite a powerful way of doing that. What I'm going to talk about, though, the next demo, which is about inspecting the behavior of the system as a whole. Now, let's say, for example, we were passing messages around, but we weren't really satisfied with waiting for the whole thing to finish up before we got the result, right? Like, you're playing Halo, right? You're going around meleeing and bashing people up and all of that. You don't want to wait until the whole thing's over to figure out whether you won. You want to actually see the hit points of the opponent going down rapidly as you stab him, right? So in order to do that, what you do is you have an observer that can... So grains don't have notification mechanisms just yet. But you have a way of observing the grains by registering yourself as an observer and saying, hey, when something interesting happens, let me know. And the way you do that is by creating a game observer. So in here, I have a game observer interface. Now, this interface should be known to the Orleans framework. So if you notice over here, I put all my interfaces into the one assembly, and that gets code-genned the one time, and now Orleans knows all of the different things that it needs to actually be able to create factories for. Now, I've gone one level further and created a pub-sub mechanism that allows me to publish to any number of observers messages from any number of grains. So and making that itself a grain. So this is, a classic way of saying everything looks like a nail because now I have a hammer, right? So they're all grains. The pub sub thing is a grain. The child is a grain. The game is a grain. The child grain is going to talk to the pub sub grain. That guy is going to send messages to an observer, right? Or a series of observers. And so I've actually implemented this in here. So I'm going to start by setting this on the startup project. Don't make the same mistake twice. And here's the observer. Now, the observer is actually part of the client. So, funnily enough, I've now set... So the client's responsibility is the one to react to the messages that are being sent to it, right? In this case, the notifications or the callbacks. So the Orleans framework doesn't really need to know what to do with the notification. It just needs to know that it needs to go to an observer. That's all. So the observer, in this case... writes to the console. And if you go into program, you'll see that I create a subscriber grain and I provide it the observer and say, hey, you're a subscribe grain. I'm going to subscribe to you. When something happens, tell me stuff. And it knows what needs to be done because I satisfy the appropriate interface. So subscribe takes an iGame observer, and observer is an instance of iGame observer. So we're all good and happy. Now, if we do this, let me go in and there's another interesting little thing. I've had to create two new game grains and child grains. Now, this is a bit funny, because really, there's nothing different about this observable child grain. Semantically, they're the same. But Orleans doesn't know that. So if I have an implementation for the child grain, the Orleans framework knows, hey, when someone asks me for the child grain, I can instantiate using this concrete type. But if I have two implementations of the same interface, then which one do I pick? So because these interfaces are effectively marker interfaces on the implementation, you have to go ahead and create your own second level markers, and thankfully they actually follow the whole inheritance semantics, so I didn't have to copy and paste anything. I just had to inherit, and life is golden. So we'll go ahead and take a look at the classes. The observable grain is exactly the same as that one, except that it starts publishing messages saying, I've just passed a message, I'm just about to be eliminated, and I've just won, or something along those lines. And the pub sub grain knows how to send the message on to whichever observer has been registered with it. So I can observe more than once. So let me run this. Control F5. Again, no debugging. The previous time we got some messages because we were using the logger. So that's a useful way to debug the stuff. So there's actually a mechanism to just get a logger and start writing stuff, and you can add to the frightening list of notifications that comes flying out of this thing. What's happening? There you go. And now, we know in real time what happened. So, if you think about passing the parcel, that's what happened in the game. Child 1 passed a message to child 2. Child 2 was now it, so it took its little present and walked away. It was the first one to be eliminated. Then child 3 passed it to 4, and 4 got eliminated. And so on, all the way down the track. Now, when you come back to 1 here, 1 has been eliminated, so it can't take anything more. It can't take off another layer from the present. So what it needs to do is just pass the package straight on. And so it's just passed on the message, unchanged. And eventually, after going the whole round, file says, aha, all you guys have been eliminated. I'm the last one standing, so give me the big present in the middle. Right? And that's actually the way in which you model these things. So let's see what we've actually achieved here. We started with a sort of description of some of the real-world problems we face, right? Concurrency, scale, big problems. We talked a little bit about actor theory. Most of it went over my head, probably went over yours. No problem. There's plenty of resources out there, including a video by Carl Hewitt, who was the guy who invented it, where he explains the actor model very well, much better than I had. Then we talked about the specific implementation of the actor framework on Azure. We talked about how there's a virtual actor framework that abstracts away the message passing semantics and the object management semantics from you. So all you have to do is pretend that the actor is already there, ask the framework to give it to you. It manages scale, resilience, all of that, and gives you back something that you can send a message to by simply calling a method on it. We've talked about the nuts and bolts of actually creating a simple actor, you know, the mechanics of sending tasks back and forth, working with promises, the mechanics of storage, and we haven't talked about a few things, which I'll come to in a minute. And then we talked about some more of the advanced topics, the topics of immutability, topics of reentrancy, stateless workers. We looked at PubSub, a way of actually simulating notification mechanisms. We talked about observing grains. And there's a whole heap of stuff more. There's stuff to do with timers, where you can do periodic work. There's there's a whole bunch of stuff that we didn't actually cover,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then we kind of talked vaguely about what kind of applications this kind of design is good for, right? And Internet of Things, something like what we're talking about in terms of managing large social graphs and activities between those. This is a good way of interacting with that. Anything that requires you to not necessarily have strong transactional consistency across grains, that's actually a good rule of thumb to look for. So if you need something where you need strong consistency across a whole aggregate of things, you probably don't want to be looking at the actor model in isolation. You may want to look at actor models plus something else, or potentially look at different models of looking at stuff. And then, you know, there are implementations out there. There's already distributed caches that are there, implemented using Orleans. There's, of course, Halo. And there's a whole ton of open source community stuff that's available. So some of the related content, you need to follow those guys over there. Sergei Bykov is the guy who runs
He's part of the Orleans team.
Yeah, the Orleans team. Richard Asprey is a prolific.
He's done a whole bunch of blog posts and stuff, and so has Neil McKenzie, and those are their Twitter handles.
There's
a guy
Ruben
from
Bond,
Melbourne,
yeah.
Ruben Bond, who's actually been using it as well in some of his stuff. But you know, I would highly encourage you to start looking at, you know, just go Google, Bing, whatever, for those Orleans white papers. There are a couple of white papers that one that the team published quite recently as well. So it's pretty good reading. It actually talks about all the conceptual things related to Orleans. John
and then play
also,
Halo. Right? You get to see real world example of it.
Yeah. John also spoke about you know, Carl Hewitt on Channel 9, he actually discussed that.
There's a whole
in
video
great
there.
Detail. So that's a pretty good one. And of course, you know, you can find us later at the Hub Happy Hour. So we'll hang around today. So if you've got any questions, you can ask us now, or you can, you know, come and find us.
Any questions about rugby, I'll be asking. So you can answer. And that's it, folks. Thank you so much for your time, patience. Thank you. Are there any questions at all? Yes, sir.
So the question was, can you load balance these?
No. The question was, can you have silo locality, silo affinity when you create a grain? I think there's some fine-tuning things that you can do, but generally that's an anti-pattern in the actor model, as you clearly agree, right? It's an anti-pattern. There are a couple of ways to get around it. If you're going to have to ship a hell of a lot of data back and forth, that's usually the biggest problem. So the best thing to do is fling it into a common repository and refer. That's one way of doing it. But if you have local grains, the immutable message mechanism guarantees that as long as it's local, they'll pass the references. And that's probably the strongest thing that you can get. Oh, there's one final thing I should mention, which I really should have mentioned. As of Saturday, as I was coming in to speak at lovely New Zealand, my very first day in New Zealand, I got a tweet from Sergei saying that Orleans now has a go-live license. So literally off the presses, you guys are the first to know, you know, from some kind of forum like this, that you can actually build an Orleans application and go live with it.
It's still in preview.
Still in preview, but you have a go live license,
you
which
you
did not have until
like,
2 weeks ago or a week ago.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Any other questions? Anyone?
No? Yeah. Yeah. So you have the same semantics for that, and that's, did Edward hear the question? It's about reliability of communication. Now, Orleans is actually slightly stronger than your traditional actor framework in that it not only guarantees that best effort in terms of having a durable queue, but it actually guarantees the order of receiving the message, right? And this is unusual because this actually makes it harder to reason about the correctness of something because you're now dependent on removing that indeterminacy from the picture, right? And that's actually bad for scale because there's certain problems that come with it. Bounded indeterminacy is actually bad if you listen to Carl Hewitt, right? But in this case, we have a guarantee that when you stick something into a queue, the queue is durable. When the silo goes down and comes back up, you will actually have a second opportunity. The semantics that are used for passing messages is an at most once delivery, right? Because there's a whole bunch of stuff around dead messages and all of that stuff. We talked about queue-centric workflow last year somewhere. There's a couple talks on that. So you don't really want to always have, you know, guaranteed delivery because it could be that there's a poison message in the queue and that will potentially cause all kinds of other problems. But they will guarantee at most once semantics, and they will actually guarantee message order.
Yeah.
Within They will guarantee message order to the same grain. They will not guarantee message order to multiple grains. So if I send a message to that grain and then that grain, you're not guaranteed that that grain receives it before this one. But if I send this two messages, the first one will reach before the second, and that is guaranteed.
We'll be available.
We're available. I think we have to wrap up. Happy to chat.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.